From college to the pros, America's pastime in full force 24-7 on The Long Ball with Andrew Brown.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome one, welcome all. You, me, and everybody in between. Thank you so very much for tuning in to The Long Ball with Andrew Brown. I am Andrew Brown, and however you may be listening from Google Podcasts, KXNO, iHeartRadio, and more, thanks for making this a part of your day. Thanks for tuning in. And if you get the chance, please comment, like, share on Twitter at TheLongBall1. Also, you can catch me up on Twitter as well, my personal Twitter account on Facebook as well. So please go ahead, give me your thoughts, give me what you want to hear, give your thoughts on who I should go after next. For those who are not familiar, this is primarily a baseball show where I go through and talk with some of the great minds in baseball, both collegiately and professionally, from former professional athletes to coaches, collegiate players, beat writers, and more. Having a great time in the world of baseball, and I hope you do too. I will note for all, you know, football, basketball fans, I do dip outside the world of baseball from time to time. So if you have any pressing things you want me to talk about or you want to hear, give me a shout out on Twitter and on Facebook. Also, through the show's official Twitter page at TheLongBall1. Please give me a shout out, give me a thought, and I'd love to hear what your thoughts are and what you want to hear. This show, ladies and gentlemen, again, brought to you in great part by the great folks at Insulite. Now, for those who have an electric fence in some capacity, trying to see if your electric fence works has been shocking. Literally, you've had to go and test it out yourself, usually involving you getting shocked. But this time, you don't have to. There is a reality where you don't have to even get out of your house to know that your electric fence is working for you. It's called Insulite. It's an LED flashing insulator that you can see from up to half a mile or more away with a span of over 2 to 3 years. Man, this is what you need. You don't have to move, don't have to get out of the comfort of your own home, and you'll know just by the pulse of the fence and the flash of the LED light that your fence is working perfectly. Make sure to check it out today at Insulite.com. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we move on by taking a step back. And what do I mean? Well, in order to really respect the game as it sits today and in the future, there's no better way than to look back into the past. And that's what I'm doing right now with this segment, This Week in Baseball's Past.
From the ground balls to grand slams, from strikeouts to perfect games, it's time to take a look back in time on This Week in Baseball's Past.
There it is! Rose has eclipsed Cobb! That's number 4,192!
There it goes! A long drive! If it stays fair, home run!
For This Week in Baseball's Past, we dip all the way back to 1903, October 1st edition. It's the very first World Series game ever played, and the Pirates take on the Pilgrims. And it was hurler Deacon Flippe for the Pirates that bested Cy Young and the Pilgrims 7-3 at the Arlington Avenue grounds in Boston. Also, it was the first time that the Fall Classic had its first home run. That was due to Pittsburgh right fielder Jimmy Sebring hitting the first Fall Classic big shot. And that, once again, ladies and gentlemen, is This Week in Baseball's Past. All right, now with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's get down to brass tacks, shall we? The reason why you're listening, the reason why you tuned into the show, for all the great interviews, all the great experts, the individuals who make this sport great, and that's what we're going to do right here and right now. This show, as I mentioned, this episode anyway, is going to dive back into collegiate baseball. I know, second straight week of college baseball, but don't you worry. It really shines a good light. It's a great interview, a great conversation, because I'm having that conversation with Dan McDonald, head coach of the University of Louisville baseball program, and he coached the collegiate national team over this summer. I'm going to talk to him about that experience for him, some of his players, his thoughts, and some more topics in the world of collegiate baseball. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, a great friend of the show, a great coach overall. You know him, you love him, the one and only head coach, Dan McDonald. Coach, thank you so very much for taking the time to join us here. I know it's been quite a whirlwind of busy activity for you here over the past year. I mean, a busy summer, a lot of travel. Obviously, the fall's pretty busy here. The off season never really seems to slow down. But, man, really appreciate the time you're taking. Thanks for joining the show today.
Oh, you got it. Thanks, Andrew. As you said off season, but as you also used the word busy. So that's, you know, it's just part of college baseball. You know, we go year round with this, and that's what makes it so much fun. It's fun coaching the kids and, you know, really never taking a long break other than a holiday here or there. So it's fun being around college baseball 12 months a year.
Well, as long as you love it, you don't work a day in your life, right? You know, it's, you know, college baseball 24/7, 365, coach. That's where I live. I love it. I love college baseball. Love to talk about it. And obviously you live it. And, you know, one other thing you also lived here through the summer, in fact, coach, was being the coach for the Collegiate USA national team. That's huge in its own right. Very big. You got to experience a lot of great things with a crop of really talented players. What was that experience like for you going through that, and what are your thoughts coming out of it?
I think it's something every coach aspires to, whether it's, you know, the basketball or maybe soccer or obviously baseball, the different sports, to put the USA across your chest. I did it 10 years ago, and the likes of guys, and you see them in the big leagues, Garrett Cole, Sonny Gray, and Trevor Bauer, Colton Wong, Yasmani Grandal, and so many guys on that team when they were in college, now everyday, regular, superstar, big leaguers. You know the kids you're coaching on the collegiate team, you have several future stars and all-stars and great players. So you don't take that for granted. I probably had as much fun just following college baseball last year, knowing, okay, I need to be in tune with who are the best freshmen and sophomores around the country. And I just so much enjoy talking to coaches, scout. I love recognizing the best players, why they're the best players, trying to find out as much as I could about them, and then getting a chance to coach 26 of them this summer was a real treat.
Well, and it really was a treat for us as fans and media to watch what was a really great team, a very talented team put on display, of course, in the red, white, and blue colors. That was very fun as well. And just on your point, on a side note here, you know, you talk about guys who are now MLB stars that you once coached at the collegiate national team 10 years ago. Man, I got to say, I'm very excited that I am potentially witnessing the next Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, and so forth, and like Kerstad and guys like Torkelson. You know, very excited to see how that develops, because ultimately that's really exciting for me. That's very fun for me. Nonetheless, Coach, let's dive into the beginning of your summer, the beginning of the collegiate national team's summer. You know, there were really three main goals that you set out for, and those were to defeat your three series, one against Cuba, the second against Chinese Taipei, and the third one against Japan on Japanese soil. That one hadn't happened in 40 years. Looking to do it here for the first time again in 40 years, but we'll get to that here in just a bit. But first off, well, even before we get to those series, I mean, you had the red versus blue series, a chance for people to make the team, get qualified, see where they stand, so to speak. Kind of take us through what that process was like and how that was for you and the experience that. And also, it really seemed like the team, once they got the full team together, really went hot and heavy into that Cuban series. What was that like as well? Kind of take us through the Red Blue series and the Cuba series and what that experience was like for you and your team.
Yeah, even before the Cuba series, you have what's called the Red Blue series, and it's short. It might only be 3 or 4 days, but man, that's 36 or so college players, and that is so much fun because those are the best of college baseball, and now we have to kind of cut it down to 26 And a lot of it's just based on how they feel, health, the pitchers, can they endure the next 3 weeks, the position players, what versatility do they have? Do they mind being a role player? Or if not, then they can go to the Cape and be an everyday player. So it's so much fun putting the team together. Then you jump right from the Red-Blue series into the Cuba series, and we were hot, man. We were playing good. We swung the bats well. We got quality starts on the mound, and we win that series 4-1. The one game we lost, 3 in the ninth, and so we almost swept, which is, you know, about a month later, I'm watching them in the Pan Am game. They're on TV, and I'm watching Cuba beat up on some countries, and I'm going, man, that's the team we played against. And those are men, but they're seasoned veterans. They know how to play the game. But our talent, our youth, our energy definitely put us over the top. And you're playing at home, so to play in front of the home crowd, and I think the biggest crowd is July 4th night in Durham, 12,000 people, you know, standing room only because of the fireworks show afterwards. And it was a fun week.
Once again, everybody, Dan McDonald, head coach for the University of Louisville baseball team and this past summer's coach for the collegiate men's national team, on the road, all over, displaying the USA colors. And coach, we'll talk about that on the road part right now. You know, that was quite the trip. You go from home in North Carolina all the way over to face off against Chinese Taipei. Man, what was that experience like? And how do you feel that series went over? Because that had the same feel of the Cuba series, just with an extra travel day added in there, a lot of things having to go on. I mean, what was that experience like for you and your team?
Yeah, of course, you got to hit the road, and that's not easy. Flying, you know, around the world. We left on a Sunday morning. We got to Taiwan Monday night. That's how long it takes in different planes, but also they're 12 hours ahead. So you get there, and now you're playing Tuesday against a really talented baseball country. And I knew the bodies were going to be fatigued, and we lose a close one-run game. And then we have to endure some rain and travel, and we can't play where we want to play, so we got to get on a bus and drive 3 hours. And I was probably most proud of us during that series when we started a game, got rain delayed, had to wake up early the next morning, drive 3 hours, play a doubleheader, and then drive 3 hours back to our hotel, and we got the bats going that day. We won the series. And then we head over to Japan with, as you said, the three goals, win the Cuba series, the Taiwan, and the Japan series.
Well, and now, Coach, I'm sorry to cut you off there. I didn't mean to. I really want to focus on the Japanese series now because, man, that was quite the series. You know, coming into it, you had the longest drought that I believe a collegiate USA national team has had against a singular opponent, 40 years on Japanese soil. The U.S. has not won. And it's kind of interesting because the U.S. team has not really had that type of a deficit. And, you know, you're coming into it, you know, certainly the series was a great series. Went to game five, man, wonderful wonderful just outcome in general if you like baseball. But what was that dynamic like? Unfortunately, you didn't come away with the series win. But, you know, afterwards it seemed like you and a lot of guys were pretty almost heartbroken by it. What was that series? What was that kind of a competitive series like? And what was it? What was the feeling like afterward?
Yeah, it's 1-1 in the Japan series. We get rained out there, like the rain was following us over the summer, and we have to play a 9 a.m. game. And I remember my speech in the outfield, and I know those players will remember it because I really challenged sleepwalking. Before we had Reed Detmers on the mound, and Reed threw a one hitter. It's a left-handed pitcher from the University of Louisville, so I was very comfortable with him, getting to coach him all year. And we win the game. We're up 2-1. But you're flying. You're on buses. You're traveling around that country, too. You're not just playing in one city. And we lose game four, and then it comes down to game five, which is what you want. You want it to come down to the final game. And we kind of ran out of pitching a little bit. We were going on fumes. And guys that pitched in the Cuba series, we didn't feel we're healthy enough to pitch in the Taiwan and Japan series, and you don't want to risk their future, and fatigue sets in. And so we just kind of ran out a little bit there at the end and fell up a little bit short. But, you know, the emotion, the highs, the lows, and like I tell the kids, man, it's not every summer you get to experience that kind of emotion. And as I shared with them the next day at breakfast, I remember that night I got back to the hotel room and I was just crushed, devastated. And I told my wife, I felt as bad that night losing game 5 to Japan as I felt when we got eliminated from Omaha. I mean, it was sickening how bad I felt, because we put it on the line and we wanted to do something that hadn't been done in like 40 years, and to get so close. But like I tell our players at Louisville, and I told those guys at USA Baseball, I mean, how other way would we want to live? Why wouldn't we raise the bar so high? Why wouldn't we put it all on the line? You can't achieve anything great if the bar is not set high. And so overall, it was a great summer. And my last message to the kids was, go back to your teams. Don't walk around with all the USA gear and show everybody and you know, the, hey, I played on USA Baseball, and act like you're better than everybody. Show by your actions. How do you go back to your team, and how do you lead? How do you pour into younger players? How do you share what you learned over the summer and help your teams be better? That's the sign of what type of player you are, is can you go back from that experience and help your teams be better? And so I hope the coaches see those small changes throughout the fall. I know I've spoken to a handful of them, and they are just excited by how their kids have come back, and they've led, and they've worked hard and prepare themselves to have monster years.
Once again, everybody, you're listening to The Long Ball with Andrew Brown, my guest here on the treepans.com phone line, the one and only Dan McDonald, head coach for the University of Louisville baseball program, and this past summer's head coach for the collegiate national team. They took on a home series against Cuba, then traveled to take on Chinese Taipei and Japan. And overall, it was a phenomenal summer, great summer, and very fun to just be a viewer of, and let alone be a participant of. Now, Coach, my next question, kind of off the beaten path here just a little bit. I mean, you talked about really the going back to the red-blue game, the red-blue series, I should say, and kind of the, I guess, the selection process being more than just looking at who may be, you know, the most talented and so forth. Kind of take me through that whole scenario again. You know, what are the big deciding factors beyond just the skill level and so forth as to why someone would go and play for the USA team instead of going to like a Cape Cod League or so forth?
It's all what's best for each individual, and there's nothing wrong with going, you know, to the Kansas Jayhawk League or the Central Illinois League or the Northwood League, Alaska, New England, Perfect Game, New York. There's so many really good, great leagues out there. The Cape Cod has the prestige to it, so I don't blame kids for wanting to go there. But just like Team USA, there has to be that right fit. Are you talented? Do you fit the mold that they're looking for? Are you wanted? You know, to play in the Cape Cod League is, you know, half of it is to be wanted, that those general managers, those coaches, scouts are promoting you. I know agents do a good job of promoting you. But as coaches, we have to sit there and say, hey, is this a good fit where you can go and get better? Because my fear is sometimes you send really talented young hitters to the Cape and they get dominated and they don't come back any better because they just hit 180. They don't feel good about themselves. They're searching for a new swing, as opposed to going to maybe a league where they get more at bats. They have a little more success. They're not afraid to make some small adjustments. And so it was fun talking to the best players in the country and the pros and cons. And you want to come to the red blue series and try out for Team USA? Do you want to go to the Cape? And heck, we took guys that were playing in all different leagues, and we had a great trial. And like I said, even those that didn't make the team with us, I vowed at the first team meeting, I want these 5-6 days to be, you know, memorable. That even if you don't make this team, you're glad you had this experience. You were here. You were a part of it, because it does help them grow. And sometimes failure and rejection is a part of it. You're going to get sent down. If you make it to big league spring training camp, you're going to get sent down. If you make it to the big league, you get demoted. It's a part of it. I mean, the baseball world is tough. And so those experiences, you hope, help these really talented college players. And the summer is crucial to the development of our program. And where we send them and what they do has a big impact as to their upcoming future success.
You know, you talk about the success here for the individuals you're coaching. You know, two individuals who have had plenty of that so far, and two very exciting reasons that I tuned in were individuals by the name of Spencer Torkelson of Arizona State and Heston Kerstad of Arkansas. I mean, they lit up the college baseball world last season, and they did just that here with the collegiate national team. What was it like to coach those dynamic players, you know, dynamic players who could really impact the game just with a flip of the bat, a swing of the bat, you know, a catch of the glove? What was it like to be coaching them? What was the dynamic like overall?
What you learn about the great ones is they have aptitude, the ability to take instruction and put it to use. They have a growth mindset where they want to get better. That's what's really cool about the great ones, is they don't just settle or assume that they're great or think they've got everything figured out. They want to be coached. They want to improve. And for me, you're getting big, strong, physical hitters that have had a lot of success in college baseball. So how can I help them? I'm a defensive fanatic. So I want to, you know, Spencer was a better first baseman than I realized, and I hope he left at the end of the summer realizing the value of a great defensive first baseman. That, you know, Heston was a good outfielder, but we really emphasize showing up every day, getting good first steps, good reads, being a good to plus defender. Don't just be a big bat or, you know, what they deem a left fielder sometimes. Be a really good outfielder, because that stuff matters. And they did. They took pride in their fungo work, their BP work every day, getting balls off the bat. The other thing is, I'm all about base running. I love teaching base running. So here you have big physical guys, you know, have hit their whole life and they hit for power and that's what they're known for. But I wanted them to be great base runners. And so I'm working off of first base one day, off of second base, off of third. I'm teaching base running. I'm taking notes during every game. So they know, wow, this Coach McDonald guy, he's really into running the bases. Because I think it's maybe an undertaught skill of the game. And in our program at Louisville, we want guys to get in the pro ball where they're ahead base running, where you don't have to teach them much about base running. They already know how to run the bases. Now, it's your job to put your philosophy as to when to run, not to run, all those type of things. But I love hearing from base running coordinators go, hey, man, we had Cole Sturgeon in the Red Sox organization. Man, this guy knows how to run the bases. So I had a lot of fun working with those superstars because, yes, they're known for their bats, but they're great teammates, great leaders, really good defenders, and now hopefully they're good base runners as well, that complete player. So it's nice to know you feel like you had a part in their development. But I always tell them, guys, you better be thankful of your college coaches because they got you, helped you get to college, and they coached you really well. For you to be on Team USA, it's hard to make this team. So be appreciative of those that have poured into you, and hopefully I just had a little small part in helping them get better and wanting to get better.
Well, and not to try and toot any horn here, Coach, but, man, you know, the emphasis that you put on base running and defense truly makes your team more of a complete team, and a lot of these players are complete players. And you see that when it translates to the professional level. Obviously, the biggest highlight that we can think of right now off the top of our head, Brandon McKay, a really complete player overall there as well. And now as we kind of go back to focus on the collegiate national team here, Coach, and we speak about that defense and that really thrilling, exciting aspect of the game, you know, two individuals that I thought really stood out as well, Alika Williams of Arizona State, Nick Lofton of Baylor. you know, throughout the regular season, those were two, I think, underrated players that really should have been showcased more. And you really, you certainly showcased them here this summer. What were your thoughts on their dynamic ability to change the game from the defensive standpoint? And just how fun was it to coach players like that?
No doubt, because they can play the shortstop position. And, you know, there's a lot of shortstops, whether it's high school or college, but will they stay at the shortstop position? So when scouts look at them, do they project them as big league shortstops? And that was the reason we had both of them on the team, because we felt like the value of two shortstops. And so Lofton became more of our utility guy, could play third, could play second, could play the outfield, and showed his skill set, which is a real value in pro ball now. I mean, we talk about that a lot with our guys. You know, I call them the Ben Zobrists of the game. Show your value by the more positions you can play. And Alika was more of our everyday shortstop. But I've always learned this and understood this as a coach. You can learn a lot from your players, especially the great ones. And those were two guys that immediately in the first day or two in trials, I remember going, wow, look how good their feet move. Look how early their glove is down. And I had an infielder, Alex Pinellas, was our star freshman third baseman from Louisville. And I immediately asked Alex, what do you notice about those two? He's like, coach, their feet, there's so much life in their feet. That allows them to get in a good fielding position. And then they get their glove down early, which too many young infielders, I don't want to call it cool or whatever. It's just they roll the glove out, they flip it, they're late to the ball. And so I'm learning from them. I'm taking pictures. I'm texting all my infielders who play for me going, hey, guys, these two shortstops are phenomenal. Let me tell you why. Nothing against their skill set, but there's some fundamental things that they do. And they can hit a fastball. They play hard. I project them as high picks, future big leaguers. Of course, they got to stay healthy, but you just don't see the natural, pure, and especially nowadays, I say the American-born shortstop, because let's face it, there are great shortstops from around the world, and we're competing with the, you know, the Latin Americans and the guys who grow up playing on bad fields and have unbelievable hands and skill sets. So there was a lot of pride for me going, hey, I think these two can be future big league shortstops.
You know, and it does, it definitely goes back to the conversation of the fact that we may be seeing potential big league stars now in the making. And for me, that's thrilling. And I know it's exciting for you here, coach. And, you know, I want to talk about even more individuals who could have that same path. This time talking on the pitching mound here. Now, I know you had a very good stable of pitchers, both relieving and starting pitchers throughout this summer. You know, a couple I want to highlight. One you've already talked about, Reed Detmers. Kind of, you know, what was it like seeing his development, and not just from being in a Louisville uniform, but being in a different setting, a different uniform and so forth? What was it like to see his progression, his transition? And then also, I'm in Big Ten land. I got to give a shout out to one of the very few Big Ten individuals who is on this roster, Max Meyer from Minnesota. What was it like for him? I mean, he's been a kind of a jack of multiple trades. He's a closer, reliever, starter, kind of where is he going to go, so to speak. But what was it like? What was it like working with him and what he brought to the table?
Well, Meyer was cool because I didn't, you know, I heard about him as a freshman, and then I saw what he did on Team USA. And, you know, he was a closer. I think he had like 7 saves, which is amazing in a short summer stint. And so I knew Minnesota had moved him to a starter, and there was kind of talk, is he going to pitch for Team USA? Or now that it's his first year starting, will there be too many innings? So selfishly, we were excited when they said, hey, we're going to let him go to the trials. And we just felt like, you know, being a veteran of USA Baseball, that's why we deemed him to throw in game one. Like, he could set the tone in game one, you know, that so-called Friday night starter that we take so much pride in and value in college baseball. And you're going to see it in the playoffs now. As all the playoffs are starting, you know, who's your number one? Who's the guy who throws first? And so I thought Max did a really nice job in that role, and what a bright future he has, being, you know, kind of a converted shortstop, hasn't pitched, you know, maybe been abused, overused his whole life. So I think there's just a lot of innings in that body. You know, Reed Detmers was just, from the first weekend of college baseball, the numbers he was putting up, he was National College Pitcher of the Week more than once. He was ACC Pitcher of the Week more than once. He ended up being the ACC Pitcher of the Year as a sophomore. And it was scary in the sense that everybody was asking about him, and I was comparing him to Brendan McKay. And that's a scary thing as a coach, because you don't ever want to put that on someone else. Brendan McKay won all 7 Player of the Year awards and was the 4th pick of the draft and is already in the big leagues now from the 2017 draft. But being left-handed, that similar demeanor, they pound the strike zone. They have the big, you know, hard breaking ball, that big, sharp curveball that you don't always see as much maybe nowadays. You see more of the sliders and the cutters and the sinkers. So I knew what a superstar he was. And when, you know, it was smart, I thought, you know, our pitching coach, Greg Moore, put him in the 3 spot, you know, and said, hey, let's let him be in that game where it's either 1-1 and now we can swing the series, or it's 2-0 and we can win the series. And that's what happened. Like, he was in that perfect spot where we would either win the series on his start or we would take the lead, as we did in the Japan series, kind of in the driver's seat. And like I said, unfortunately, we ran out of, you know, I think some depth and pitching talent there. But, you know, and what I love about Team USA is you hope the players make each other better, the hitters and the position players, and then you hope the pitchers make each other better. Like, you learn from the other great pitchers. What do they do? What do they do on their off days? What do they do the day after they start? What pitches are they throwing? How are they attacking hitters? What's their pickoff move like? You know, so, you know, Reed Detmers got to play with Asa Lacy, is a super talented lefty from Texas A&M. And I thought they kind of fed off each other and learned from each other. So it's a real treat, because I told you those pitchers 10 years ago are, you know, they're everyday names in the big leagues right now.
Once again, everybody, you are listening to The Long Ball with Andrew Brown. And however you may be listening, thanks for tuning in across iHeartRadio, KXNO, Apple iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Radio Public. However you get your podcast, thanks for tuning in, and thanks for making this a part of your day. And yeah, thanks for tuning into what is a very, very exciting conversation with Dan McDonald, head coach of the University of Louisville baseball team and coach of the collegiate national team over this past summer. And again, we're catching him on the treepans.com hotline. Now, Coach, kind of going off the beaten path here just a little bit, it involves the conversation, a conversation that you and I have had once before, and that involves the third assistant and the whole does he get paid or not debacle. It's been a conversation that has been in the works for over a year and a half now. And as we already know, last year it was taken to a vote across all the conferences in baseball. Unfortunately, with the no votes for Big Ten and Big 12, the overall vote was no. But, you know, interestingly enough, instead of the 2-year span that it would normally take to be able to vote on this again, here we are a mere matter of months after the fact, and we get to vote on it again. In fact, October, this is the month where that vote will be taking place yet again. How much do you feel all the rhetoric and all the conversation surrounding this topic has moved that needle? And then the second part to this question, Coach, you know, obviously we know about the financial aspect of it all, but just how big, what are the other big positives behind just passing this in general that would really, really strengthen collegiate baseball and softball?
Well, I tell you, you know, sometimes I say, sometimes when you lose, you really win. And even though we lost the vote, I thought you guys in the media did an unbelievable job of bringing this story to the forefront. And that's what you hope the media can do. And it's not just the negative stories. Obviously, there's positive stories. but this was something that was kind of under the radar, and the media, whether it was Twitter or the talk shows or the newspapers, brought this story to the forefront where we had so much attention, and those schools or conferences that voted against it now had to answer. You know, whereas in the past, you could say no, but nobody challenged you for it, and nobody really knew about it. It was behind closed doors, whereas when this thing, it blew up. And so even though we lost the vote, it blew up as to what schools and what conferences were against it. And it gave us 6 more months to educate and talk to athletic directors and get across the different conferences, different parts of the countries as to why this is so important to our game. And yes, it, you know, on a monetary value, it's, well, I just, you know, we can't afford to pay another baseball assistant and softball assistant. And we made it clear right out of the chute. That's a nice piece to it. Don't get me wrong. These guys should be on benefits, and they should be getting paid for as hard as they work. It's sad that they don't. But this was first more about their careers and their path. And if we can create this third assistant and allow them to recruit, the experience they can get on the road. I have a young man. You know, I say young man. I mean, I guess I'm getting old, but he's married with 3 little kids. But he's been up for Big 12 recruiting jobs. He was just up for an ACC recruiting job. He was up for a MAC conference head job. He's that good. But sometimes they lose out because, well, he hasn't been recruiting the last 3 or 4 or 5 years. And it's not because he doesn't want to. It's the NCAA rule. And so when we allow 3 coaches to recruit at the same time, about 5 years ago, that was a great passing. But the reality is, do I need to be the guy recruiting on the road, or should my third assistant, he needs the value of recruiting on the road? And now with head coach responsibility, I need to be on campus more often. I'm responsible for everything going on, and I can't miss practice or miss a scrimmage or miss things going on, which sometimes you have to recruit. It is what it is. So I think we got a lot of dialogue. This thing coming back up to vote, we hope it will pass. 300 baseball assistants will now get a chance to recruit, and their roles will be expanded. And then, yes, some will get paid right away, some will not, but we're moving in the right direction, and this is the right thing to do for college baseball. As much money as we put into facilities and resources and the success and the exposure college baseball is having, it's just not right to have a guy who volunteers 365 days a year. And yeah, he can get paid through camps, and he can get paid through some other resources. But at some point, we have to look in the mirror and say, hey, baseball, we should be paying this guy. I mean, come on. Baseball's making good money now at many schools, and especially at the NCAA level with the regionals, super regionals, postseason, all the TV contracts we have. So hopefully this thing will pass, and it'll be another big step for college baseball.
Well, and you hit the nail right on the head there, Coach. It would be a very big step for collegiate baseball and softball, and a lot of progress. You know, progress made, you always want that progress there. And I think that would show the biggest amount of progress within the sport. And so really hoping that goes through, knock on wood, and of course, hoping for that great outcome. Now, Coach, as we wind things down, we'll go back to a little bit briefly what we talked about at the beginning of this episode, and that is your schedule beyond just coach of the collegiate national team here. The off season is never really off, and of course you've got a lot upcoming here. What's on the docket for you here in the next couple weeks, next couple months? I hear a little birdie told me that you would be in and around our neck of the woods here.
Well, we talked about it. We joked before earlier. I got to get into Iowa. You know, I recruit Iowa Western, and I got derailed this past weekend. You know, didn't put together that Ohio State was playing at Nebraska. And so it made flights getting to Omaha, which is sometimes a place you can fly into, and just drive over the bridge. And we've got 2 Iowa guys, Matt Cook and and guys that have played at, and Cody Eagy played at Cherokee High School there in Iowa, played for us in Louisville, and both pitched in the big leagues. And so Coach Snyder, our recruiting coordinator, is from Iowa. We've got high school kids from Iowa, and Tate Cooner and Trey Leonard. But we also, this time of the year, we're looking at some junior college kids. So whether it's Florida, Illinois, Atlanta, you name it, we're bouncing around the country. But that big-time football game Saturday night kind of changed my plan. So I'm going to have to try to get in there in the next week or so.
Isn't it funny how that all works, Coach? Oh, man. Well, once again, everybody, Dan McDonald, head coach from the University of Louisville, joining me here and wrapping things up with this question, Coach. And, you know, we continue to talk about the off-season, quote-unquote off-season for you, despite how busy it is. You know, I don't think people really understand, even through the conversation that we've just had right now, just how busy it can be. Is it safe to say that the fall season is perhaps the busiest time for you as a coach?
I think, you know, for most baseball coaches, you know, Labor Day hits, college school is in session, and we go basically up till Thanksgiving. Whether it's team practice, scrimmages, individuals, weight room time, we really utilize the fall to help these guys get better. We get to recruit for about 5 weeks, and so, you know, between the three coaches, my two assistants and myself, we're bouncing around while we're trying to coach our kids and bring kids on campus. So it does make for a busy fall. We're allowed to play two other opponents, which that's added some excitement to the fall. But for Louisville baseball, we're taking our second trip to the Dominican Republic. And we're allowed to go, you know, once every 4 years. And that was an awesome trip 4 years ago. 21 of my players are playing professional baseball that were on that trip. And to play the Winter League teams, as we talked earlier, you know, about the world trying to be one of 800 big leaguers and you know, a third world country, a Latin American country. They are really talented, really passionate, and you get a real appreciation for why they take advantage of baseball and the opportunity it could give them and their families. And so it's an eye-opener for my guys playing against Winter League teams. Those are professional players. But we also serve, and we go to a girls' orphanage. We go to a women's shelter. We feed villages out in the country that don't have a lot of resources. And I think it gives a real appreciation for our kids as to how good we have it in America. And it's a great, great trip, and it's something I would go more often if we could, but under the NCAA rules, we're allowed to go once every 4 years. And so that's another big trip on our schedule this fall. But well worth it, and great memories, and we'll learn a lot of great lessons from it.
Well, and you know, Coach, I'm sure it will turn out to be just fine because you, the University of Louisville, and everybody down there really help embody the good in this world. And, you know, really appreciate the time you've given me and really appreciate the conversation, because every time you're on the show, it's just really impactful conversation. And, I, you know, like you said, you know, live your life to the fullest. You live your life, you know, go all the way, you know, balls to the wall, so to speak. And you do that. And it's just been a great conversation. I really appreciate the time, your coach.
Well, glad to. And, hey, we're talking college baseball in October. So it just shows you how much the sport has grown and the excitement around the country, and should be a big spring.
Well, there is no doubt about that here, Coach. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here. The one, the only head coach for University of Louisville baseball, Dan McDonald. He was the collegiate national team coach over this past summer. A great guy. And, Coach, thanks so very much for joining us. And thank you, everybody, for listening in. And it was a great conversation. Please share this, like this, spread it around. I know a lot of people get just as much of enjoyment as I did out of it, hopefully anyway. Please like and share this on Twitter in general. Please share it. Give me some comments if you want. If you liked it, if you didn't like it, if you have questions you'd like to ask, please go ahead and give me some feedback. Give me some comments if you want. I really appreciate those who have already, and I look forward to more. Speaking about looking forward to more, before we wrap things up officially, make sure to check out next week's episode as we'll be talking MLB expansion. That's right. MLB has already been on record as coming out to say that they're looking to expand MLB to 32 teams. And that means up to four different cities could have new teams. So a brand new culture, so to speak. And one of those potential sites, Raleigh, North Carolina. We're going to be talking with an individual who is helping to spearhead the group to get baseball, professional baseball, in Raleigh, North Carolina. That's coming up next week, folks. So stay tuned right here. Thanks again for listening in. Until we see each other next time, as they say in the showbiz world, stay safe.